Welcome to The Found Symbol. We are four actual Freemasons, and we're going to discuss all the symbols, signs, and Easter eggs in Episode 3, Murmuration, of Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol. Hey, I'm John, and I'm here with Jason, Joe, and Robert, and boy, here we are, the third episode, the third week of Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol, and we're going to talk about all the cool Masonic symbolism hidden in there. And maybe, you know, I've noticed we've started to go off track, we started to go beyond Masonic, but all into the really cool esoteric symbolism as well. Fair warning, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you've not seen episode 3, stop now. So, what do you guys think? This episode, this was a little interesting departure from the book, but overall, it's getting good.
So, at the risk of being that guy, right? I did the same thing when I read the Boys comic books. Don't judge me for having read that entire series and found it hilarious and good. But I watched the show, had a complete departure from the comic book series. And even here, you would expect it. They did it with The Walking Dead, where they departed from the comic book. A good adaptation often departs. They did it with Foundation. Joe and I just found out, mind's blown. This whole departure to keep it fresh for us, right? And I came downstairs after I watched the episode today and I said to my wife, I think I like it better than the book.
And that's a good thing, right? It's mixing it up a little bit, giving you something new to chew on. You know, Dan Brown wrote this book in 2015, so now we're getting a little different. Oh, that's 09, right. Yeah. Holy smokes. So yeah, it's been a while. And again, if we all knew what was coming, why would we watch it? But
well, we would still watch it, but yeah. There's also the idea of adapting things for the screen. And so there are a lot of times where changes are made just because, you know, it's easier to transmit on the medium of the small screen or the TV.
Yeah. The author
of Freemasons. It's not just keeping it fresh.
Right. The author of Freemasons for Dummies says he didn't know how they could do a show where 90% of the book is in the dark. And so here we are. We've adapted that. We haven't seen that scene come up yet. So hopefully it'll be a good one. Let's go right into this week's episode. Robert Langdon is digging into that Hebrew text, that biblical text that we know has been altered, and is trying to decipher this symbol of Hebrew characters using the pi and key, I guess you would call it, on Solomon's ring. And one thing that amongst all his notes, he tries to decipher what does this Hebrew mean and what symbolism could be there. So one of the aspects is gematria.
Yeah, and so really, really interesting. Gematria is really a Hebrew alphanumeric code or cipher. It was probably used in biblical times, later adopted by other cultures. Gematria is still widely used in Jewish culture, and it's been adapted for the Greeks, Arabic numerals, and English gematria as well. It's essentially a form of numerology where the letters of the Hebrew alphabet are substituted with corresponding numbers. And so the first 10 letters are given the values that increase consecutively from 1 to 10. The next 8 letters increase by a factor of 10 from 20 to 90. And the final 4 letters are given number values that increase by a factor of 100 from 100 to 400. And so gematria is often used in Hebrew as an alternative to Arabic numerals when recording numbers. And Hebrew dates in particular are generally written using gematria.
Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting that they use that as a potential solution. And yet, again, the solution was relatively easy, obvious, as a substitution cipher where you replace one letter with a different letter. The easy way to encode it is to do what they call a shifted substitution cipher, where they took, in this context, they took the word wisdom, which he extracted out of his noetic head, and put at the beginning of this alphabet, removed all those letters of WISDOM, put them in the front, and then not only shifted this substitution cipher in English, but then also transliterated it from Hebrew. So it was a transliteration of a shifted substitution cipher.
Which is, and that's really where,
yeah,
it's really where I have a big gripe in the episode, though.
Yeah.
You know, having studied Russian for several years in college, transliteration is anything but an exact science. You just take a look at Russian ruler, czar. Is it C-Z-A-R? Is it T-S-A-R? And up until several decades ago, the C-Z-A-R, you know, transliteration was thought to be the correct one, and then it shifted to TS several decades ago. So the idea that he would get that transliteration 100% correct on the first try, maybe, you know, Joe, you might know this more than I, but maybe there's a, you know, there's a standard for transliterating Hebrew. I just don't know.
No, you're talking about a language that has no vowels. No, no, absolutely. Yeah. No. And that, now, did he do that before or after he put on the magic noetic brain hat?
After, right? No, that was after.
That was before. Sure? Okay.
It was before. So
he didn't have the magic noetic brain powers yet.
It was a good code, though. Transliteration aside, the idea of encoding something several times over, you know, increases the likelihood that it can't be broke, right? In fact, I think there's an ancient law, I say ancient, just an old law here in the U.S. that you're not even allowed to, like, encode things more than six times. It's illegal. It's kind of an interesting, weird law here. I'll pull it up and I'll put it in show notes later. But you guys, that was cool. I liked the code.
Interesting.
I did not. It confused me.
So later on, they talk about the Freemasons, and they describe the Freemasons as a beautiful system of morality veiled in allegory, which to Freemasons, our ears perked up, because it's not far off from another phrase we've heard very similar to that.
Yeah, and that phrase comes from our own architect of much of the ritual used here in the U.S., William Preston, and he defined Freemasonry as a peculiar system of morality veiled in allegory and illustrated by symbols. And so I actually, in the Noachide talk that I give sometimes, I open the talk with that encapsulation of Freemasonry, because it is, in my estimation, really the perfect elevator pitch for what Freemasonry is. And so any Mason who hears, you know, oh, it's a beautiful system of morality veiled in allegory, your ears are going to perk up. And Dan actually uses that, Dan Brown uses that quote in the book, the Lost Symbol, as well.
Yes, he does. So that is something that is familiar to Freemasons, and you know, it describes Freemasonry pretty well, but it is a very, very not an abstract, but a very convoluted way of saying what our fraternity is. Mm-hmm. And then we have some encoding going on as well. I know, Robert, that you were looking into the passcodes on the phones and other locations.
Yeah, that's right. This was really interesting. So I'm always just kind of like the devil's in the details, and I look for things that usually aren't there. So, but it was interesting, right? Because her passcode for her phone was 7596, which is 27 if you had them all up. And so that's 27 is like, oh, that's cool for Masons, right? 27, you know, AMD chapters or 27 members, this exclusive magical number. But 27 is the first composite number that's not divisible by any of its digits. It's also 3 squared. So 3 by 3 by 3, right? So I don't know if they purposefully did that. You know, if they did, kudos, nice job.
Good attention
for those writers. Yeah, I thought it was cool. Just a little blip on the radar, but it was cool.
Yeah, and so speaking of the phone, we do see, you know, the Leviathan cross come up again. We talked about that in a previous episode, and how it's really not necessarily Masonic, but again, they're taking this, what was the 33rd degree, as the inner circle of Freemasons, and applying this to this mystical but not actual inner circle of Freemasons. But
how do you know?
Yeah, I'm not that level yet, so
you don't know.
It's the Palladium. Come on,
it's the classic thing. You know, Freemasons take over the world. Oh no, we don't. Hey, that's just the you just don't know yet.
You just not don't know high. Enough, but you do. The someone who's not a Freemason, right?
That's right. Yeah,
and then we get to this clue that gets deciphered about buried Ezra Dove is the code that gets determined. So then they go to the cemetery to find Ezra Dove.
Yeah, what was interesting about this was the location. Again, looking for things that probably aren't there, but. Dan Brown's book, this book, Lost Symbol, was released in September of 2009. So I was like, is it year 09? Are they just saying, is it just like an homage to when the book came out? I don't know. Probably not. I did look for anagrams for Ezra Dove. I didn't see anything that was reputable, like that was, you know, anything of significance. I might just be stupid.
But. So here's what I was able to find out. Okay, so Ezra Dove. You know, they say a prominent Freemason, which is obviously the tie-in to the mysteries. And yet, if you do any research, a person by the name of Ezra Dove in that time frame does not exist on any Masonic records. Sorry, spoiler alert, it is a MacGuffin that just carries the story through. However, there was another Mr. Dove, Brother Dove, who became a Freemason, who actually shares the exact same birth year as this fictitious Ezra Dove. And this Ezra Dove in the urn in this episode, if you pause briefly over the plate beneath the urn, you'll see that this Ezra Dove was born in 1792 and lived to 1848. But there was a different Brother Dove born in near the DC area in Virginia, called Brother John Dove. We in Virginia have a John Dove, a Masonic award and everything. And so what's so special about Brother John Dove? John Dove was born 2nd September 1792, the same year as this Ezra Dove on TV, but lived much longer and died 16th of November in 1876. And John Dove was a very popular Masonic ritualist, authored a lot of the monitors that existed today. And in fact, if you're familiar with the Baltimore Convention, was a key player to get everyone on one national ritual system. But you might ask, well, we don't have one consistent Masonic ritual throughout the United States. And it was also his fault, because as they were pulling the history shows, as they were pulling together a common Masonic monitor for all the states to follow, he was vehemently against the use of illustrations in the monitor, and yet they published it anyway. And then he went on a tirade and saying, well, if you are getting a monitor from these people, that's not legit, we don't agree. And they said, we're going to print it anyway. And then all of a sudden it started fracturing. And yet to this day, we have a variety of Masonic rituals because John Dove, not Ezra Dove, but John Dove, didn't want to include pictures in his Freemasonic monitor during the Baltimore Convention. So a nice little subtle fact of Brother Dove. But again, it's it's interesting that they chose that name. And we'll talk a little bit more about this this dove individual as we go through. But next up, I was really impressed to see that there was an actual, no kidding, Masonic initiation reference included in this week's episode. I always love these, whether you watch movies like From Hell or other movies that include, you know, scenes from, you know, behind the scenes of a Masonic ritual. And I love to see what Hollywood does, what they get right, what they get wrong. There are certain things that obviously we can't go into, but it is interesting. One thing I wish I had seen during my Masonic initiation are the dudes in the hoods. Like, those black hoods look pretty cool. They look pretty creepy.
Yes, the cloaks.
I was expecting cloaks. I did not get cloaks.
You got to go to a tea lodge.
Yeah. Our membership problem would disappear if we just had the cloaks.
Yes. So
there are, I mean, right? There's groups out there that use cloaks.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah. Not explicitly Masonic ones.
Not Masonic. Yeah. Right. So I agree. I think this like element of solemnity, it really adds a little flavor to it. Some mystique. Mm-hmm.
So we see here, Peter Solomon, you know, initiating his son and, all the cool Masonic nods that come with that. Some real, some stretch for TV. But it is kind of cool that, you know, if you're not familiar with Masonic initiations, they do a pretty good job, I have to say. They're 80%, 90% there, for the short piece they show. What do you guys think?
These candles are a fire hazard.
Yes. They didn't clear the fire code first.
You would never have that many candles in a lodge room. Come on.
Yeah, Temple Board would just flip their stuff. No, I mean, I thought it was really cool. In fact, it almost seemed as if Solomon doesn't even know it's his son, right? Because the blindfold comes off and he's like, oh, it's Zach. Like, he's like genuinely enthusiastic. If you read the book, there's this whole thing. There's this like, I'm not joining the Masons. I'm not going to join. And in this, like, at least in this
altered state of consciousness.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. he joins, right? And then slashes the throat. It's like, is this Solomon's kind of subconscious mind coming to grips with the fact that he, you know, killed his son or something by not helping him out? You know, a very interesting plot device.
Yeah, and you even see one of the initiators attempt to slit the throat of...
It's Moloch. Well,
it is Moloch.
Not attempt.
That's true, yes.
Yeah, it does.
Straight up does. Yeah. For dramatic effect. And I think it's a pretty neat little bit of mystique that gets added to this storyline.
You know, even the question they ask, you know, what is the innermost desire of your heart or something like that? You know, it's very interesting, you know, some of the things they went into in that scene.
Mm-hmm. That's a clandy lodge.
Except the fact that you would go there.
Oh, totes. I'm probably one of the guys. In the
heart. Be on the sidelines with popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
No food or drink in the lodge.
That would be like the real sign, like they were just coming in, like it would go past like the cool ornate wood with like the crappy, you know, 80 GSM weight copy print, paper, like
comic sans, yes, font.
Yeah,
the hallway has the wood paneling. The hallway, yeah, to that really cool room is wood paneling, yeah, and just yellow like char from the decades of smoking in there.
Yeah.
The camera slowly pans over a dues notice for like $27.
With the background of the funeral home blue carpet.
Oh,
dude, we are destroying the show.
So the
we're in a mood tonight. Oh my
goodness.
Yeah,
this is great. Let's bring us back. So this is all happening in Peter Solomon's mind. Simultaneously, Robert Langdon's mind's getting altered through some newfangled noetic science. We start to hear this tone being played through these earphones. What's this tone?
Not this tone. These two tones.
Oh.
These are binaural beats, which are used in meditation. And a binaural beat is actually an illusion that tricks your brain. What happens is you listen to two tones that are slightly different frequencies from each other. And your brain actually interprets those two tones by aligning itself to the difference between the two. And they align with your brain waves, to produce, you know, a beat with a different frequency. And so it's, you know, you have different hertz levels that align to different states of consciousness, all the way from like deep sleep, all the way up to like extreme attentiveness and concentration.
Yeah, I mean, you can find these anywhere on the internet, right? You can either search YouTube for binaural beats or find binaural beats, yeah, generators, right? There's apps for this where you can set, you know, certain frequencies, again, where they'll alternate. So your brain fills in this missing thing to either give you attentiveness or to make you relax. Is there any truth to this, Robert?
Totally. There's a lot of truth to this. As somebody who uses this for the last, I don't know, 9 years, I've taken advantage of a program in particular. You know, I'm not selling them or anything, but if you all are interested, for over 50 years, the Monroe Institute has been pushing the idea of this thing that they call HemiSync, which is hemisphere synchronization. And it is a guided meditation that works for lots of different things. But their primary, like the first thing, if you were ever interested in something like this, I would tell you to go to the Monroe Institute's website and check out their free they've just posted some of these on YouTube. I think they actually sold the rights to HemiSync not too long ago. So there's actually another website that owns, I think, all of the original recordings that Monroe did himself, in these guided meditations. And, it isn't cheap, you guys. It's like $380. But it's really incredible if you're into that kind of thing and you want to try out something new. It's legit. It'll start out with a semitone on right ear, and then you'll hear another semitone in a slightly different frequency. And what it sounds like is an oscillating wave, like a wah 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 wah, like kind of sound in your head. And then after the meditation is complete, the two tones are exactly the same as they were when they started. But by the end of 27 minutes, it sounds like the exact same tone. They're in complete synchronization. So this trick that Jason's talking about really works. And then the underlying idea is that you can actuate yourself in certain ways depending on the types of tones. So it's a really fascinating idea. There's proven science behind it. The Monroe Institute was headed up a few years ago by Skip Atwater, who was one of the guys who worked with the Army's first program on remote viewing called Project Flame Grill, which later became Stargate, and then just remote viewing. And then he was the director of Monroe Institute for a number of years. So there's a lot of efficacy and science behind this. It's not hocus pocus.
It's wild. So after coming out of this deep meditative state, Robert Langdon, you know, free associates all these different terms and actually starts to put these things together in that, you know, that Hebrew that they were trying to figure out, and actually reassembles 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 12. So what is that about, Jason?
So 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 12 is the specific point in the Bible where God, you know, tells Solomon to ask for what he desires, you know, the innermost desires of his heart. And instead of saying riches or the deaths of my enemies or anything material, he simply asks for wisdom. So the passage goes, starting in verse 11, "So God said to him, 'Since you have asked for this instead of requesting long life or wealth for yourself or death for your enemies, but you have asked for discernment to administer justice, behold, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart, so that there has never been nor will ever be another like you. Moreover, I will give you what you did not request, both riches and honor, so that during all your days, no man in any kingdom will be your equal. And so, you know, we mentioned this, we talked about it last week with Jamie Paul Lamb on the importance that wisdom plays within Freemasonry. You know, we have the three pillars, wisdom, strength, and beauty. Wisdom is the station of the worshipful master, also representing the sun. Wisdom is a huge, huge theme in at least Blue Lodge Mason.
So while not overtly Masonic, it definitely wisdom, the theme of wisdom applies. While deciphering this Ezra Dove, Peter Solomon locks the door and tries to figure out what is the meaning of this word dove.
And Robert Langdon.
What did I say?
Peter Solomon.
Langdon says that. So
Peter's floating in the pool.
That's true at this point in the movie or in the show. What does the word dove mean here?
So that right there is the Hebrew word Yonah, referring to Jonah. And that'll come up in a minute when we talk about Leviathan, because that's where, you know, we start to get that secret mysterious group called the Leviathan group, which Jason won't tell us about, even though he's a member. And make the connection that Ezra Dove means something else other than this person's name, because they pulled down his funerary urn, stuck their hands in it, which is kind of grody, and didn't find anything in it. So, you know, he started to free associate, I guess, from the magic noetic hat powers that he still had left over. And
magic hat.
I want one of those hats. Does the Monroe Institute give out hats like that?
You look like you're in Tron when you wear one of his hats.
I want that. Ooh, 80s.
No, but you know, the precursor to that was Joseph Smith's hat.
Oh.
Also magic.
I don't want that hat then. Okay.
JKM.
Never mind. Don't want that. So, so he starts to free associate, and he realizes that the word dove in Hebrew is Yonah, which is also Jonah.
Yes, of the whale theme.
Patriarch of the whale theme, which we'll get into in a second.
Well, let's talk about it. What is the whale?
Fine. So whale is another term for whale, which you find in the Hebrew Bible, is Leviathan. So after he digs around Ezra Dove's funerary urn and pulls out his ashes, which again, kind of gross, not sanitary at all. He didn't have a mask on either for that. And he notices on...
So it's pre-COVID.
Very much pre-COVID. Nobody has masks on there. He notices that picture that you just showed with the boat and the large sea creature, which is known in the Bible as a Leviathan, which has been transliterated to whale much later on. This big ugly sea creature grabbing that big boat, that's a Leviathan. So he says... Jonah, Leviathan group, you know, all the magic Robert Langdon things happen, and he focuses on that stone relief there.
Kicks it in, finds the Leviathan cross, and goes down in the super secret basement underneath a grave for safety.
Yep, and then the last interesting tidbit about this is that priest who makes that cell phone call. This is all related. So that priest who says, I've never called someone and spoken to them in Latin. I might try that this year. That might be a new thing for me. But he gets on the phone, calls somebody mysterious and says, Columba resurgit, which means the dove rises in Latin. So we don't know who he was talking to, but maybe we'll find out. But another interesting tidbit is Columba is Latin for dove.
A lot of doves.
Last interesting. A lot of doves. There's one more. So the room, yeah, there is. So that big structure that has all the funerary urns, I've never been in one before in a real cemetery, but it's called a columbarium. So it is a place where you store funerary urns for public viewing. Yep, right there. And again, it uses the Latin word for dove or pigeon. And columbarium is a nesting place for doves. But we use that to mean a resting place for funerary urns for Robert Langdon to stick his gross hands in and wriggle around in. So,
wow. A lot of
desecrate the dead.
A lot of aviary tones in this episode. Which leads us to another biblical reference, but not one from the traditional books of the Bible, one from the Apocrypha. Joe?
It's not Apocrypha. So in the it's not. So in the show, this is getting more towards the end of the episode, when we're guessing it's Malak calls Robert Langdon and basically quotes a verse from the fourth book of Maccabees, verse 8. And the quote is, "But if by disobedience you rouse my anger, you will compel me to destroy each and every one of you with dreadful punishments through tortures." So this comes from 4th Maccabees. Robert Langdon says it's apocryphal. It's technically not apocryphal. It's deuterocanonical, which means, for you Bible nerds, it's in some Bibles of Christian sects, but it's not in others. So the Roman Catholic Bible has 4th Maccabees. Most Protestant Bibles do not have 4th Maccabees.
So it's apocryphal.
Greek Orthodox. It's not apocryphal. It's deuterocanonical. So, yeah. So some Christian sects make it part of their canon. Some do not. So it's about a 50-50 split.
It's canonical-ish.
Ish. Light.
Canonical light. Yeah.
Yeah.
Canonical with almond milk.
Hold the salt. Okay. And then...
it's canonical-palian.
And then we get to the very end of the episode where they've been very careful about naming their episode something symbolic, and they waited to the very end because as I was looking into what murmuration meant, it was fascinating to find that the murmuration is a flock of starlings, and I'm like, what does a flock of birds have to do with this episode? Until they reveal the hidden film strip of a gentleman controlling a flock of starlings at the very end, right? Trying to demonstrate the power that one can hold with this this Leviathan group is protecting the secret of total control. So we see a still shot here of a person directing the flow of, you know, hundreds if not thousands of starling birds floating around. To which he immediately kills them all in one fell swoop.
Yeah, this scene for me was like a beautiful, awesome piece of cinema, actually.
Yeah.
I felt it. The music was perfect. The revelation was perfect. You have this idea, because this is a prequel, right? Like, Langdon has not experienced the things that are to come yet in his later adventures. You know, this isn't following the same way the books do. So this is, he's having this revelation for the first time that, well, first of all, when he puts that helmet on, he's like, wow, I can't believe that worked. And he acknowledges there's something to the idea of, you know, sound and the human brain or whatever, as they would call it, the noetic science. And so people out there might not know, but like the Center for Noetic Science is actually started by Edgar Mitchell, astronaut to, he had an out-of-body experience on his way back to Earth. And so he gets home and he starts up this society. And Edgar Mitchell is groundbreaking in some of the things that this institution was able to do. And through this entire era in history, they talked about this rogue guy from the Leviathan group who wants the power to take it and use it. And so this is at the turn of the century. So this is also like time where spiritualism is coming out and what New Age is born out of, this idea of imparting your divine will on the thing so that you can manifest reality. And then, you know, of course, today
it's manifestation. Yes,
it totally. Yeah. So this is completely in line with, you know, the secret, the law of attraction, but to the nth level, the actual physical manifestation at will, not through emotional belief, but through, you know, manipulation of matter. And so this whole scene was really incredible to me. But when we saw it, the character here, these birds get, he shoots his arms down in this one foul, like, motion, and boom, all these birds just, like, dive into the water and die. Or what? Yeah. Oh my God. I can't believe I just did that. Sorry. inner dad joke, I guess. The iceberg, something, something, the id. But the image of the guy just looked like, for whatever reason, just bam. I just thought of Max Heindel for whatever reason. It's this image of Max Heindel standing at Niagara Falls. And he was there at the beginning of the turn of the century, one of these new age guys. It was just really interesting. Like, that's just where my mind went right away. I'm not saying they're saying this is Max Heindel at all. I just thought it was
saying it's aliens, but it's Max Heindel.
Yeah, maybe. But like, what a cool piece, right? Because you just watch Langdon totally go, what am I watching? Like, because this is old footage. It can't be faked.
Mm-hmm.
So he's having a complete, like, you know, mind boggle. And then, of course, the film.
Well,
and the film, and then starts on fire.
Yeah, and now nobody else can watch it.
Yep. Yeah, so no one can believe it, right? So, wow. So that was a great bunch of things we saw. This is, you know, if you found something else, let us know. We had some comments below, some of the other Easter eggs and symbols you may have found. But that's all for this week's episode. If you want to see more content on the signs and symbols of Freemasonry, subscribe to this channel, the Masonic Roundtable, and we will see you next week.